Well, again, thank you for the invitation. Word obviously didn't get round about who was preaching this morning. I've never seen so many people in Christchurch. It's wonderful to sit round and see not many empty seats, and that's where the children have been anyway. So thank you, and well done. There's a family here. And for the older ones, just one quick hello. I bumped in the other day to D.A., David Abernethy, who the old... Oh, yes, there's some giggles coming. Some of the old Cheam Baptist crowd will remember. And we chatted, and I said I was coming here this morning. And he said, oh, I saw a few of them recently at a Thanksgiving service, was it? But do give them my best wishes. So from the Reverend David Abernethy, who was in great form, very best wishes. Now, God is our refuge. We've had emphasized to us this morning, and I want to actually get behind that. What does God is our refuge really mean? And we're going to talk a lot about people and about ourselves. Jesus, as we saw very vividly, went into the last trip into Jerusalem, and there was the hosannas and the palm leaves, and what a wonderful guy he was. And within the week, it was crucify him, and he was dead. David, who we're looking at particularly, having written this psalm, was the one who, do you remember? I'm sure you do. Slayed Goliath, and the people came out and said, praise! He's killed his tens of thousands. And King Saul, he was given praise because he'd slayed thousands, and he wasn't very happy at the comparison. But David was the bee's knees. Everybody was praising David. King Saul himself was doing exactly that. We find it in 1 Samuel chapter 18, a wonderful chapter. King Saul was praising David. And here we are. A year or two later, the verses that we read in that psalm, David being pursued by Saul, hiding in caves up in mountains, beside himself with grief. The people who just months, a couple of years earlier, were completely on David's side, praising him, were now walking on the other side of the street. He says in Psalm 31, when he was anywhere to be seen, people are very fallible. You and I, we're very fallible. And somebody wrote, I read recently, that they had some swallow friends. They were people who disappeared in winter. And it's very true, isn't it, of us as people. We do our very best in many cases, but we really are unreliable. And yet, in this chapter, in this psalm that we read this morning, we find God is our security. And what actually does that mean? In practical terms, what does that mean? God is my security. I say it very easily, and I mean it, but what do I mean? And I'm going to mention later on one particular couple who really have picked this one up and are running with it. God is my refuge. Verse 15 in Psalm 31 says, my life is in your hands. My life is in your hands. And I always think, and some of the older ones will remember, youth praise, and my favourite chorus in it, chorus 102, says, I know who holds the future, and he'll guide me with his hand. With God, things don't just happen. Everything by him is planned. So as I face tomorrow with its problems, large and small, I'll trust the God of miracles. Give to him my all. I know who holds the future. And I'm constantly intrigued at the fact that God has control of birth, God has control of death. All that happens between those, we have a massive impact on our life. We can change day by day, minute by minute, but it's God who controls birth. We are brilliant nowadays with our spaceships to the moon, robots that are going to dominate our world in the not too far distant future. It's really quite scary if you read into where robots are already. We can do all of that. We're brilliant. But life comes about when a tiny sperm and a tiny egg collide, and 9 months later, you've got the most complex bundle of life you could possibly imagine. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. Who creates that? God. Can we? No. God creates. God is the one who produces birth. We had a Thanksgiving service in our church last Sunday. Wonderful. A couple who were desperate for children found they couldn't have them and adopted a child, and there was little Gabriel, and we were giving thanksgiving for him. Because God had said no to that couple. How and what and why, who knows? But there they were, having adopted this lovely, lovely little lad. It's God who controls birth. And death. I, 18 months ago, went to see some friends in North London, hopped on a bus back to Waterloo Station, got off the bus, walked across the, is it Waterloo Bridge Road still, that road that comes across the bridge and goes past the station, and halfway across, the lights went out, and I have no idea. Next thing I knew, I was lying on the pavement with people rather stupidly saying, "Are you all right?" having presumably carted me from the middle of the road to the pavement. Fortunately, it was some virus thing of some sort, and with blue lights and ambulances and St. Thomas Hospital, they quite quickly gave me some antibiotics and sent me home. God controls death. God controls death. You and I have no idea as to how and what and why. It is God. Birth and death are in God's control. We can do so many things within it. It is God. It is God who controls. And so, what do we actually mean when we talk about trust in God? And just three clues, really. One is relationship. Have we a relationship with God? I love children. I don't have any of my own. I'm a favourite uncle, and I happily play with children. What happens if they fall over and bash their knee? Do they run to me in tears? No. No. You know who they run to. It's mum. Or if she isn't around, it's dad. There is a relationship there, which is a very strong one. It's the natural place of, and we've used the word refuge a couple of times this morning. And if you want some work doing, help, who do I go to? And if you have a relationship with a builder or a painter or decorator or whatever it may be, you feel a great sense of security. You ring them up and say, "I've got a job, can you help?" There is a relationship there. And we need to ask ourselves this morning, initially, when we talk about security, do we have a relationship with God? And relationships come primarily from communication. And in my life, there's two real methods of communication. One is a long-term a discussion. And you married couples will know periodically you sit down and there's a big issue and you thrash it out for an hour or whatever it may be. But normally, it's in passing. Oh, I've got to shoot after this, I'm doing that, what's the answer to this? And there's that sort of rapport. And I suggest to you this morning that we, in our relationship with God, can we trust in God? Do we know God? need to have that communication. We need to sit down, and many of us in the old days called it a quiet time. Often nowadays people talk about meditation. Sit down and quietly spend time talking with him, yes, but listening as well. Not just out with the list of requirements, but just spending time quietly. The in-depth conversation. And that's lined up with the arrow prayers, as I term it. I would think probably half a dozen times in a day, I say, Lord, help. Or, Lord, thank you. It's built into me to acknowledge him. And the classic one, of course, in the Bible is dear old Nehemiah. Do you remember? He was valet to the king, massively important job. Friends came back and said, our old city of Jerusalem is in tatters. All the bright people have been carted off into exile and it's falling apart. And he really felt that he had a duty to go back to his old city and help repair the walls. But he needed to get probably a couple of years' time off to do it. And he was scared to ask the king. And then one day the king said, well, what's the problem, Nehemiah? You're all cheerful and buoyant, and you're not, you're down. What happened? Do you remember? Nehemiah prayed to God and said to the king, I want time off. In the middle of a conversation with the king, Nehemiah's reaction to this question the king asked was, I pray, help. We need a relationship with God, so he is the person that we think of and we run to. We need to communicate with him, and we have need of confidence in him. We need confidence. Now, confidence builds up in a period of time. There's a wonderful verse in 1 John chapter 5 at the very end. We know also the Son of God has come and has given us understanding so that we may know him who is true. And we are in him who is true, even in his Son Jesus Christ. He is the true God and eternal life. We have confidence in him. And that, as I say, builds. And you get to the age that some of us are, and we have great confidence in God. Verse 23 in Psalm 31 talks about God preserving. And in 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 18, Paul talks about rescuing. You see, what God does, and I can vouch for this in my life, he doesn't take us away from danger and difficulty. The preachers today that preach this gospel of prosperity, if you're a Christian, God will protect you from all wrong. If you're a Christian, your bank balance will overflow. It isn't like that. It wasn't true of the disciples. It wasn't true of Jesus. They didn't have big bank balances. And boy, did Paul get into difficulties. And Jesus himself constantly said, if you follow me, you'll be persecuted. No, what God does, and it's clear in this psalm we've read this morning, he preserves. What God has done in my life constantly is not to take me out of difficulties. I've had my ill health, my cancers and so on. What God has done is to see me through. He has preserved me. I have confidence in God. So when we talk about trusting him, let's ask ourselves the question. Firstly, do we have a relationship? Is he the one we automatically look to? Secondly, do we communicate with him constantly in big time as well as in the arrow prayer? And can we look back with confidence and say, yes, he has preserved me in times of difficulty? Now, I just want to move on now to see where we fit into this, because how does it work? And I put in my notes, we are his hands. And it was mentioned a little earlier on. if you are in difficulties, you pray and say, Lord, help. Very rarely does a miracle suddenly happen. What does happen? People, you and I, around us, are there to be God's hands. We are God's hands. He doesn't have any others on this earth. It's us. How does it happen? And again, the classic one in scripture to me is dear old Ananias. Do you remember him? Saul, not the king we're talking about in this chapter, but the one who became Paul, rode to Damascus, struck down, blind, led helpless into Damascus. And Ananias, who we know nothing about at all, absolutely nothing, didn't know about him before, no word afterwards, was led to go into Damascus very courageously, because Saul was the one who was persecuting Christians, and through Ananias putting his hand on Saul, we have Paul the worker, which is what Paul means, and we have most of the New Testament. It was a man, Ananias, who was God's hand in working on Paul. I mentioned earlier about a particular couple. I don't know whether any of you know the word kintsugi, Japanese word. No great nods of recognition. But Patrick Regan was a youth worker in the East End of London, built up an enormous youth project, a Christian youth project, got the OBE for it, was great buddies of William and Kate, who came along to many of their activities to give them a boost, doing an incredible work. But he and his wife had had quite a number of very difficult situations. His legs were, I don't know what the problem was, but they basically had to be rebuilt. Very long term and very painful. They had a child who was disabled. And Patrick discovered numbers of people who were saying, I am fine, I'm fine. I believe in God and I'm fine. And Patrick said, increasingly I realised these people weren't fine. They were saying the right thing. I'm a Christian, so God will look after me. But they didn't feel that. They were down, they were broken. And he very courageously gave up this work, XLP, in the East End of London, which still thrives amongst tough young people there. And he and his wife set up this new charity called Kintsugi. And Kintsugi is a Japanese word for what happens when a bowl or a vase is broken. And instead of putting super glue to put it together again, you put a gold thread in it. So when the bowl or vase is finished, you have a much better product than when you started. It is that vase or bowl back in action, but with a gold thread. Kintsugi. And they've called their charity Kintsugi. They say, we want to help people who are broken to become better people as they're repaired. Patrick and his wife and a little team working with them are the ones who, as people, are going to those who are damaged. They have a road show going around the country at the moment and talking with people, praying with people. They are God's hands. People who are broken and damaged see God as their refuge in Patrick and his team. They are the hands of God in this situation. That's you and I. And the passage we looked at just a few verses into that talks about broken pottery. That's how David felt. But it's people. It's you and I. The daughter of a very good friend of mine, Tony and Val will probably remember John T. Beckeleg. Smile from Val. His daughter, physiotherapist, went with a family to Uganda as a nanny for 6 months. Husband had a job out there and she went to look after the children. Was so devastated to see the children in Uganda in difficulties, and she as a physio could actually help them or cure them. And she just couldn't come home. So when the family did their 6 months and flew home, she stayed. And she's built up a remarkable organisation out there. Absolutely remarkable. She is God's hands. Those families who are looking for a refuge for their children. She is God's hands. Now, I could go on. I've got lots of illustrations. The early church had everything in common. Do you remember that verse, Acts 2:44? And we, as Christian men and women, need to appreciate that we are God's hands. We are the ones who can actually give the help, the assistance that's needed by others. And similarly, we are the ones who are going to receive from the family of God the security that we need. God supplies that security through us. You, I, are responsible for others who are sitting here this morning. We are God's hands. We share everything in common. And we're starting to build in our own church a mentors group. And I think Christians aren't good at this often, because as Patrick has discovered, people aren't good at admitting the problems they have. But to be in a position where you can sit down, talk and pray with an individual, a person who has difficulties, and together talk with God and give your own particular ability to them, it is a massive benefit. And we're not good at it. We aren't good at it. We are so good at saying God will provide without really sitting back and realising that God works through me. God works through you. Somebody said recently in a prayer message I had, we subscribe to God. We don't prescribe to God. We join in with God. And that's exactly what comes through in this psalm we read. David, in time of real difficulty, David said, God preserves. But the way that God preserves, the way that God is our refuge, is through you and through I. And we need, I believe, as Christians in many cases, to get out of what I've described in my notes as the comfort zone. It's so easy, isn't it? 10:30 Sunday morning. Oh, Christchurch Yule. That's where I always go at 10:30 on a Sunday morning. We have that comfort because it's great to be here. Great to be part of the family that is here. But I believe God calls us to move out of our comfort zone, to start doing things, saying things, meeting people that may well not be too comfortable for us. God is our refuge, but you and I are those who provide the refuge. You and I will receive that refuge through members of our family here and elsewhere.